Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Advanced Business Management section. This is a section that we're giving to you as a bonus section. We're going to go through a lot of things in here, including what most people find most important, which is our personal experience and actually what we do. We're actually going to go through all the different business entities that you can set up, including LLCs, LPs, S-Corps, etc., and all of the advantages and disadvantages of those different business entity types. We're also going to go through how to get your own EIN number, which you're going to need if you're trading money with other investors, because they will need to 1099 you. But as I mentioned earlier, one of the most important things that we're going to go through in this section is, hey, how did Phil and Shanoa actually carry on their business? What types of corporations and business structures do they use? Now, we're not saying that you have to use these exact corporation and business structure types that we use, but we just want to give you our experience. We're always going to encourage that you talk to an attorney or a financial planner or advisor and tell them about what you're doing and make sure that it works for you in your particular state. But I think you'll enjoy and at least have as a good guideline for yourself what we use and how we use it, just so you'll know. We're also going to talk a little bit about some legal strategies and what we use lawyers for and what we think you'll need a lawyer for to use in your process. So again, welcome to the Advanced Business Management section. We really hope you enjoy this extra bonus section. Now, this is the CYA notice for the following sections, and I am just going to read it straight out verbatim so that you understand it thoroughly. The following section and the following information is not intended to replace the services of a professional qualified income tax consultant who can better understand how these issues fit into your particular circumstances. Trying to set up and or operate a corporation of any kind without competent professional guidance is asking for serious trouble. We are only relaying our personal experiences here, and we don't recommend anything other than consulting a professional, whether it be a CPA or an attorney. Entities, our personal experience. When we've gone through this section in the past and we've gone into a great deal of information regarding all of the different types of entities, everyone has always come back to us at the end and said, that's great, but what we'd really like to hear is, how do you guys do business? So we've put this slide up front just to give you some immediate guidance on what we typically do and what we've seen a lot of people be successful doing. Setting up a simple LLC, which is any LLC, and start doing deals. Put everything in the name of the LLC. As your business grows and as your business develops, you'll probably have to look at other business structures. You'll probably have to look at other entities, and you'll probably be making some changes. If you have, for example, buy and hold properties, you'd probably want all of those either in their own LLC if you wanted to get exactly by the book, or you would at least all put them together under one entity or one LLC. When we buy properties that are our buy and hold properties, we typically put every single one in their own LLC. When we're doing projects, for example, working on properties, for example, like the mortgage assignment type properties, where we are putting a seller under contract, on those we can use a very simple LLC that anyone can set up with the help of a legal professional. And some states, they let you actually do it on your own, so you just have to do the proper research. But again, just be prepared to, you know, get going on some of this stuff. You can still buy a house in your own name, and that's not illegal, so people still do it all the time, so don't be too intimidated by it. But just getting an LLC to get going is a great way just to have your first entity and get started working your business. And as you go through your business and as your business changes and grows, then you can make additional decisions from there. Entities, our experience continued. I started to mention this a little bit in the last slide, but I just wanted to make another special note of it, and that is if you plan on holding rental property, you may consider creating two separate entities right at the beginning, or at least two separate entities right at the beginning, depending on how many rental properties you want to put in each LLC. Now, one entity is going to be for your buy and hold property, and that you'll want taxed always at the capital gains rate when you finally sell it, because most of the rental property that you have, you're going to hold for at least 1 year. Now, you may also consider getting a separate entity that is what we call our designated flipper. And that designated flipper will be taxed at your personal income rate because you're typically holding these properties for 1 year or less. Now, having separate entities helps with the IRS dealer issue. A lot of people are afraid of that, that no one wants dealer status. So if you are buying and selling a lot of real estate and want to be taxed at the capital gains rate on your long-term holds and the income tax rate, your regular income tax rate on your short-term holds, then it's always a good idea to have at least two separate entities. Now, if all you're doing is just flipping and all of your holds are just simply short-term holds, then you probably don't need two separate entities, but it is something to consider just in case you start to make that change in the future. This is the final slide on our experience with entities. When you put a property under contract, you can put it in your LLC or your LP or your S-Corp or whatever type of entity you have set up. That'll give you some liability protection. But remember, when you fill out a contract for the mortgage assignment program, you're always going to want to put in, after your entity name, for example, Billy Buys Houses LLC and or assigns. That way, they know, the seller knows that you are planning possibly to actually assign that property as opposed to buy it yourself. It's just another way to communicate with them and come in with full disclosure. Now, our final thought on this is don't get sold a bill of goods on how complicated you need to make this. A lot of people are very effective with just getting started with the simple LLC as their entity and continuing to do business that way, sometimes indefinitely. So you can still do that. You can get very complex as well. And we're going to go through some of the different levels of complexity as we talk about some of the different types of corporations. But again, check with your lawyer, check with your CPA, and see what's the right type of entity and the right type of financial planning based on the way that you're investing. Entities and business structures, LLCs, LPs, etc. Basically, we're going to have this slide be our table of contents for what we're going to be doing over the next several slides, which is basically talking about LLCs, LPs, S-Corps, and other corps. We're not really going to go into any detail on the other types of corporations and partnerships other than just right here. So let me just address some of these other ones really quick before we move on. You're very easily can set up a sole proprietorship, a general partnership, or a limited liability partnership. Those are not ones that we typically see investors and our colleagues use as they do their real estate investing. But again, check with your attorney, check with your CPA to see if this would be a good move or good entity type for you, given your situation. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we are going to go ahead and go through how to get your employer identification number, your tax ID, which is what it's commonly referred to, with the IRS after you set up your original structure. Limited liability corporations, or as they're more commonly referred to, LLCs. LLCs offer the tax advantages of a partnership along with the most important thing, which is the liability protection of a corporation, both at the same time, which is a really nice feature. The LLC does not require its owners, aka its members, to comply with the formalities of a corporation, which makes a lot of the paperwork and taxation issues a lot easier. It is a hybrid business entity having characteristics of both a corporation and a partnership. It kind of takes the best of both worlds there. So it's a really nice type of corporation or business entity to use. It's often more flexible. The owners have limited liability for their actions and debts of the company, and it's suitable for smaller companies and single owner companies, which is probably what you guys out there who are listening right now are. So it's probably a great place for you guys to get started. Part two of the LLC discussion. The primary corporate characteristic is limited liability, which we as real estate investors really love. Now, the primary partnership characteristic is the availability of pass-through income, which makes accounting for an LLC a lot easier than, for example, accounting for a corporation, a regular corporation. Now, if you operate as a sole proprietor or a partnership, you are personally responsible for any business debts or lawsuits against your business. Nearly everything you own can be at risk. That's why so many real estate investors do not operate as a sole proprietorship or a basic partnership. When you set up an LLC, you separate your business and your personal. Those identities are completely separated, which is nice, because this helps protect your personal savings, your house, your car, and your other possessions. And an LLC also provides owners with other benefits like tax savings. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the advantages of using an LLC. First off, I think most people would say that there's a whole lot less administrative overhead and paperwork with an LLC and record keeping as well than you would get with a regular corporation. The other thing people love is the pass-through taxation, meaning there's no double taxation like there would be in, for example, a C-Corp, unless the LLC elects to act like and be taxed like a C-Corp. Now, with limited liability, it means that the owners of the LLC, also known as members, are protected from some liability for acts and debts of the LLC, but they are still responsible for any debts beyond the fiscal capacity of the entity. Now, using the default tax classification, profits are taxed personally at the member level, that's the pass-through taxes, not at the LLC level, so again, no double taxes. Let's talk some more about the additional benefits of using an LLC. Check the box taxation. An LLC can elect to be taxed as a sole proprietor, as a partnership, as an S-Corp, or C-Corp, which provides you with a lot of flexibility as your business changes. Now, LLCs in some states can be set up with just one natural person involved, which makes it easy as a one-off real estate investor to set one of these up and get the liability protection while still just being one person in that entity and creating that veil between your personal possessions and your business possessions. Now, membership interests of an LLC can be assigned, and the economic benefit of these interests can be separated and assigned, providing the assignee with the economic business benefits, of distributions of profits and losses, like a partnership, without transferring the title to the membership interest. LLCs in most states are treated as entities separate from their members. Now, check with your own state and find out if that's the case for you, because that's important in establishing the veil between your personal stuff and your business stuff. Unless the LLC has chosen to be taxed as a corporation, income of the LLC generally retains its character. For instance, as capital gains or as foreign source income, it all stays in the hands of the member or members. Disadvantages of an LLC. Many states, including Texas, levy a franchise tax or capital values tax on LLCs. Beginning in 2007 specifically, Texas has replaced its franchise tax with a margin tax. In essence, this franchise or business privilege tax is the fee the LLC pays the state for the benefit of limited liability, which is why we get an LLC. The franchise tax can be an amount based on revenue, an amount based on profits, or an amount based on the number of owners or the amount of capital employed in the state, or some combination of these, of all of these above factors, or simply a flat fee as it is in Delaware. In 2007, in Texas, the franchise fee was replaced with the Texas Business Margin Tax. This is paid as tax payable equals revenues minus some expense with an apportionment factor. The ruling, as my CPA understands it, is that if you're buying a house for or selling a house for $150 and you bought it for $100 and you put $10,000 into it, you're not getting taxed on the $150 resale price. You're actually getting taxed on the profit. And there was a bunch of confusion about that initially, and there were many different opinions, and they have since clarified that margin tax. But do please look into it specifically for your state to understand how your state treats an LLC and how it taxes an LLC. Now, it may be difficult to raise capital, to raise money, to get people to contribute to your LLC, because investors are probably going to be a little bit more comfortable investing their funds in better understood corporate entities, maybe S-Corps, for example, as opposed to LLCs, that are looking more towards an IPO in the future, an initial public offering, and them getting a very big payday. But some investors will invest in your LLC. It just depends. And again, with all of these discussions that we're going to go through, we highly advise that you consult an attorney and a financial planner to make sure that you do what works for you in your state. Let's talk a little bit more about the LLC disadvantages. Now, although there is no statutory requirement for an operating agreement in most states for an LLC, members of an LLC who operate without one may run into problems. What does that mean? Well, basically, if you don't have that operating statement in place, and if you do something that is inappropriate or against the law, the veil that I've been talking about that separates your personal stuff from your business stuff, that wall there, it's commonly called a veil, but that wall there may get run over by a plaintiff's attorney as they're trying to prove that you were actually liable and not actually operating as an LLC, as instead operating as a sole proprietorship. So again, this is something that you need to talk to your attorney about to make sure that you've got it set up very well initially. Now, just as a notation here, not so much a different disadvantage, but as a notation, the principals of LLCs have many different titles. Most of the time it's member, sometimes it's manager, sometimes it's managing member, sometimes it's managing director, sometimes it's president, sometimes it's chief executive officer, sometimes it's partner. So they do use several different titles when they're classifying the members of an LLC. And sometimes it can be confusing because there can be several members of an LLC and it's not clear who the president or owner or partner is in many cases, especially if there are multiple owners. Now, some creditors will require owners of brand new LLCs to co-sign for any loans that the LLC takes out, thus making the owners equally liable for the debt as the LLC is. So basically, they are removing the very purpose that one, you know, the main purpose in many cases that people form an LLC, which is liability protection and non-recourse type loans. Essentially, if they ask you to co-sign or cross-collateralize or give a personal guarantee, then what's the use of even buying it in an LLC? Well, that's sort of a bad way to look at it. But in truth, there's still benefits of having it in an LLC, and that is, it's not just the liability that you face with getting the loan that you got with the bank or the hard money lender. It's also the liability that you face as a landowner and as you're getting different things done around your property. So it's a good idea, even if a creditor or a lender makes you co-sign, to go ahead and keep that in an LLC. So how do you set up an LLC? Well, the simplest way really is to hire an attorney to do it for you. Now, in many cases, you can do it yourself as well. Now, just be aware that a lawyer will typically charge you $300 to $600 plus a state filing fee, which is anywhere from, well, it's pretty close, should be to around $300. Now, some lawyers will charge significantly more. I have seen lawyers charge up to $3,000. So do your shopping and do your homework as you're looking for someone to hire, as you're looking for an attorney to set up an LLC for you. Now, if you do it yourself, you know, obviously you've got to do a lot of homework and a lot of research to make sure you set it up the correct way. And if you do it yourself, it should only cost you just the state fee associated with filing your LLC with the state. Now, one thing you can also utilize is startbizhere.com. That's typically charges only a $35 fee, and the state filing fee, which could be, you know, another $300, maybe more, maybe less, depending on your state. Now, once you set this up, you do need to keep minutes and records, but most investors find that it's not something that they pay attention to. Where do minutes and records come into play? Well, if you ever get sued and or your LLC ever gets sued, they're going to want to make sure that you were operating the LLC as truly a separate entity and that the LLC was making the decisions and not just you. So it is important to keep those records going. Now let's talk about a limited partnership, or as it's more commonly referred to as it's by its acronym as LP. Now, a limited partnership is a form of partnership similar to a general partnership, except that in addition to one or more general partners, well, there's also one or more limited partners, hence the LP. The general partners are, in all major respects, the same in the same legal position as partners in a conventional firm, meaning they have management control, they share the right to use partnership property, they share the profits of the firm in predetermined portions, probably according to their operating agreement, and have joint and several liability for the debts of the partnership. As in a general partnerships, the general partners have actual authority as agents of the firm to bind all of the other partners in contracts with third parties that are in the ordinary course of the partnership's business. So, as with a general partnership, an act of a general partner, which is not apparently for carrying on in the ordinary course the limited partnership's activities or activities of the kind carried on by the limited partnership, binds the limited partnership only if the act was actually authorized by all of the parties. Some additional information regarding the limited partnership. Like shareholders in a corporation, limited partnerships have limited liability, which is what we all love as real estate investors, meaning they are only liable on debts incurred by the firm to the extent of their registered investment and have no management authority. The general partners pay the limited partners a return on their investment, very similar to a dividend, the nature and extent of which is usually defined in the partnership agreement. Now, limited partnerships are distinct from limited liability partnerships, in which all partners have limited liability. Let's talk about some of the advantages of a limited partnership. Now, the general partner is personally liable for partnership debts, but the limited partners incur no liability with respect to partnership obligations beyond their initial capital or beyond their total capital contributions. So let's say that we're in a limited partnership together and I have $50,000 that I have put into the partnership. Well, I may be liable for that $50,000, but beyond that, because I'm a limited partner in the limited partnership, they cannot come after me to get the rest unless they pierce that corporate veil that we've been talking about. Now, the tax treatment. An LP normally has pass-through taxation, just like an LLC. However, they must meet certain criteria to avoid being taxed as a corporation and then have their distributions being taxed individually, so what we would call double taxation. Now, an LP can raise capital without giving up control of the business, which is one reason why people really like to use LPs if they're thinking about changing the members quite often and or they're thinking about raising some additional capital, which would change some of the ownership and some of the ownership interests. Now, an LP interest is considered a security. It can be transferred to a third party, but other general partners and limited partners have the first right of refusal on what gets sold and what gets moved and who comes in. So it's not an unlimited amount of, you know, changes unless, you know, all the other partners agree. And you can't just let in whoever you want unless all the other partners agree. Let's go through some of the disadvantages of creating an LP. Now, the two issues most commonly faced by limited partnerships are late filings or defective filings, meaning something was filed incorrectly, and the bigger issue, it seems to be, which is limited partners actually taking control of the limited partnership. If a limited partner takes control of the LP, then that could result in, you know, you and being the limited partner who's doing this, or the entire limited partnership, to lose your limited liability protection, which is again why a lot of people use this business structure, and therefore piercing the corporate veil. And remember, when we talk about corporate veil, we talk about the personal possessions and the business possessions, and you want to keep these two things completely separate. But if a limited partner comes in and starts making decisions on top, you know, for the business on his or her own, then all of a sudden that fine line between your personal stuff and your business stuff gets blurred, and that's when you see limited partners losing their liability protection and plaintiffs, for example, going after a limited partnership or a specific limited partner within the limited partnership. Now, general partners are personally liable for business debts. So what we've done in the past is we've had a separate LLC be the general partner on our LP, and then we are the managing member for the LLC. So let me just run that by you one more time. Let's say you have an LP, and let's call it Bob Buys Houses LP. Now, your general partner, which is personally liable for your business debts, could be a separate LLC. Let's say it's Bob Sells Houses LLC, and then you are a member of that. You, as the investor, are the managing member of that LLC. And that's how you'll see some investors do things. It just adds a higher degree of protection, and as you get more advanced, you may consider including some of those strategies in your business entity structures. Now, LPs are typically more expensive to create than general partners or LLCs, and we'll go through some of the pricing on these in the next slide. So how do you set up an LP? Well, very similar to an LLC, we suggest that you hire a lawyer and have them do it for you. You could also do it yourself if you were very savvy and knowledgeable about those types of things, but we typically suggest that you go ahead and get a lawyer to help you get that set up. Now, lawyers may charge you anywhere from $1,200 to $1,800, and you may find some that, you know, if you have a very complicated structure, that charge you $3,000 to $5,000 or more. Plus, there's always going to be a state filing fee. Typically, they're around $750. You may find in your state it's a little bit more or a little bit less. Now, you can do it yourself, and if you do it yourself, you'll just be paying that state filing fee. You can also do it online. A company called StartBizHere.com, they charge $35 plus, obviously, your state filing fee, and you're going to be the one filing it, versus if you hire a lawyer, they'll typically file it for you because they know where all that stuff goes. Now, once you set this up, you will need to keep your minutes and your records, but typically that's not going to be something that we find most investors pay attention to, although they need to. Again, where it becomes an issue is when someone gets sued, and that's one of the few times that people actually go back to look at your minutes and your records, again, to make sure that you're operating properly as an LP, and that one of the members of the LP is not the one who's making all the decisions for the LP. That way, keeping the personal possessions away from the business possessions, and therefore limiting your liability. Let's talk about an S-corp or an S-corporation now. An S-corporation is a corporation that makes a valid election, meaning they actually pick this physical election to be taxed under subchapter S of Chapter 1 of the Internal Revenue Code taxation rules. In general, S-corps do not pay any income taxes. Instead, the corporation's income or losses are divided among and passed through to its shareholders. The shareholders must then report their pro rata share of income or loss on their individual tax returns. So basically, you're seeing the pass-through taxation with the S-corp as well. Now, they are recognized as separate legal entities and generally provide shareholders with the same liability protection afforded by C-corporations. For federal income tax purposes, however, taxation of S-corps resembles that of partnerships. It's the flow-through. It's the flow-through straight to the shareholders annually, regardless of whether distributions are made. Now, S-corps still have to file a federal tax returns, so there's a little bit of difference there. Also, certain corporate penalty taxes, for example, accumulated earnings tax, personal holding company tax, and the alternative minimum tax, do not apply to the S-corp. So there are some advantages of an S-corp over, for example, a C-corp. There are several advantages of using an S-corp. Corporate losses, which we hope you guys don't have any, but you do see some people who actually set up S-corp so that they can have losses and do something fun like do horse racing, but that's totally off topic. But corporate losses can be passed through to the shareholders, and as the owner and shareholder, you may be able to take the loss against your personal income that appears on your personal tax return. Now, you can have the protection of a limited personal liability without having to pay corporate taxes, which is nice. You can also minimize self-employment tax and FICA tax, because your profits as a shareholder are not taxed in that manner, so they're not income-type taxes, even though it may technically be income because you're making business income off of your investments. Now, it can also be easier to raise capital as a corporation than it would be as an LLC or a sole proprietorship or a partnership. So if you're thinking you want to get additional investors to invest in your business, this may be a route that you might consider. Now, there are also many advantages of an S-corp over a C-corp, including the largest one, which is it doesn't have double taxation. Some of the very few disadvantages of having an S-corp is that shareholder distributions do have to be based upon ownership in the S-corp or in the C-corp. So you have to have that agreed upon in advance. And for example, if you know you're running a business where you know everyone up you know has the same ante right at the beginning, and if anybody has to up their ante, they all up their ante in the exact same way, then you're fine. But if for some reason one partner antes up more than the other, then you may have an issue because your distributions are not going to be based on what was the original ownership in the S-corp. So do, again, check with your attorney just to make sure that these are the rules that apply in your state. And if this is something that you think would affect you, you definitely need to talk to an attorney. So how do you set up an S-corp? Well, again, I'm sure I'm sounding like a broken record at this point, but you can hire an attorney or you can do it yourself. We definitely recommend hiring an attorney. Now, an attorney will probably charge you approximately $1,000 plus a state filing fee, which will probably be in the $300 to $500 range. Now, if you do it yourself, it'll only cost you the state filing fee, but you better be a pretty savvy business person before you do it yourself. Now, there are also online services that you can use that can help you get these started, including startbizhere.com, which is a very low fee of about $35 plus a state fee. Now, some other items to be aware of, and this is kind of important, so you need to pay attention to this if you're planning on putting together an S-corp. Now, many people believe that the decision to be an S-corp or C-corp is made at the time that the corporation is originally formed. Well, that's not the case. All corporations, when originally chartered by the state, are C-corps, okay? Do nothing and it will remain a C-corp. To convert it to an S-corp, however, the shareholders must all sign and submit IRS Form 2553 to request that status. Now, this can be done the second after you originally create and charter your corporation, or it can be done several years down the road. But if this is something that you, if you want to be taxed as an S-corp as opposed as with a pass-through tax as opposed to the double taxation of a corporation, then you might consider doing that right away, right after you file. The EIN number, or Employer Identification Number. Now, this is the 9-digit number that the IRS assigns you, or your entity, rather, in the following format, which is the two numbers up front, and then the dash, and then the seven numbers in the back. It's used to identify the tax accounts of businesses. Now, the IRS uses this number to identify taxpayers that are required to file various and very specific, obviously, business tax returns. Now, EIN numbers are used by employers, sole proprietorships, LLCs, partnerships, nonprofits, trusts, et cetera, as a way to differentiate their personal stuff from their business stuff. Now, one of the things you need to be aware of is when you get your EIN, first you have to set up your corporation or your company, and then right after you do that, you can immediately go to IRS.gov and file for your EIN number. Now, the thing to know about this is it is a free service. There are websites out there who will happily charge you a fee to get this done, but you can do it by yourself just by filling out the form SS4, or you can consult an attorney and they can help you through this as well. Many people ask us, what do I need a lawyer for? What legal strategies do I need a lawyer for? Well, the simple answer is everything that we've gone over here. You want to talk to an attorney who's familiar with the laws in your state, in your county, in your city, and tell you what works and what doesn't. Now, they're definitely going to be reviewing also these investing strategies and determining the legality and the gotchas in each state, county, township, city, etc. Now, you're also going to ask them to create contracts for you and contract addenda. Specifically, if they don't like the mortgage assignment contract and addenda that we've put out there for you, then you can ask them to use that as a template to help create your own, again, incorporating all of the laws, rules, etc., where you live. You might also ask them to do equity partnership agreements for you, investor CYA documents. We've tried to include as much as we can in this presentation, but your attorney may have some additional ones to add. Lease option agreements, if that's something that's legal in your state, in your area, you may ask your attorney to prepare that for you. And just in general, reviewing and creating any proprietary documents if you want to use your own contract. Now, many of the contracts that we use, we spent a lot of time and effort working on those with our attorney to make sure it incorporated all the things that we were looking for, as well as incorporated all the things that our attorney felt was important to make sure that we were covered and that the transaction was transparent and understandable by all parties. Now, you'll also want possibly an attorney that can create a wraparound mortgage for you or owner financing notes. Now, typically a title company or a closing attorney or an escrow officer can also do this for you, and sometimes they'll actually do it for less money. So you do need to shop around and figure out what the prices are and understand what you're getting yourself into before you get yourself into it. Now, in general, your business plan, your legal strategies, your contracts, your addendum, your corporate entities, all that needs to be gone over with your lawyer, with your attorneys, with your financial planners, and you need to ask them, you know, what's going to work for me based on my business plan and what's going to work for me based on my state and what's going to give me the most protection and the best, you know, that makes me pay the lowest taxes possible. And those are some of the things that you're going to want to consult an attorney for. Now, what do you want to look for in a good lawyer? Well, you first of all want to start off just by asking them a couple of simple questions about their experience and about whether or not their experience with what we call creative real estate transactions. How do they feel about buying subject to? How do they feel about generating lease option contracts, equity holding trust contracts, other options, partnership agreements, CYA documents, etc.? And you do, just in case, want to know if this is an attorney who actually will do foreclosures and evictions and if they can be a trustee for you to actually be able to do some of that stuff. Now, if your lawyer says to you, "Hey, I've never done that," or "I've never seen that," or "I don't think that you can do that here," you might have the wrong attorney. But if your lawyer says something like, "Hey, you can't do ABC here, but maybe if we switch it around a little bit and change the wording or added a couple of extra lines with specific verbiage that's specific to, you know, your area, then maybe I can see how you could make this work." And if you have a lawyer who's going to make an effort to try and make some of this work, then you probably have a keeper lawyer on your hands. Some tips for legal strategies. Just don't forget that every time you call your attorney, you're on the clock, so have your questions ready. And when I say you're on the clock, meaning you're paying him or her to help you answer these questions, because the answers and the research that they're going to do for you don't come for free. So be sure and be organized when you call, and that way you'll lower your bill in the future. Now, just a note, some states have state promulgated contracts that have been reviewed by a team of, well, specifically in Texas, we have a team of, I think it's either 7 or 9 attorneys that actually review our contract, and they review it about once every other year, and they're always making changes to it. But the changes that they're making to it are changes that are going to make, you know, they make clarifications. They make important clarifications where they found that either a buyer or a seller has been struggling with a specific issue. And they'll also really go out of their way to make it equally balanced and fair to both parties in the transaction. So check in your area to see if that's the case. If it is, then just to let you know, there may be a space on the contract to write in your attorney's name. Well, if you have a good title company or a good closing officer or closing attorney, they'll probably send automatically a copy of that contract to your attorney to review for you, and they'll review it and they'll bill you. But I guess my thought on that is, hey, this contract has been reviewed and rewritten multiple times to create that equity, to create that fairness. Now, there are certain things in some contracts that an attorney is just going to scratch out if it's in the best interest of his or her client. And you may want to talk to an attorney to see, hey, what would you cross out so that I can know to cross that out in the future. So it's a good idea to go ahead and pass it through your attorney the first time. But once you figure out what they're looking for, you might save a little bit of money by automatically crossing that out the next time. Now, a situation or multiple situations where we're going to need help personally with needing to, you know, get the services of an attorney is when we are doing an eviction or when we're doing a foreclosure. And don't be afraid to lawyer up when you're threatened. But always try and settle on the side, always try and mediate, always try and get, you know, as equitable and fair a conclusion to whatever argument that you have as possible. Walk softly, but carry a big stick. And your big stick is going to be like, hey, I've got an attorney too, and they're not afraid to get into it with you. However, our recommendation is just to do whatever you can to try and settle before things get too crazy, messy, and expensive. Okay, here's my final notice slide again. The information discussed in this presentation is not intended to replace the services of a professional, qualified income tax consultant who can better understand how these issues fit into your particular circumstances, because everyone's circumstances are different. And trying to set up and or operate a corporation of any kind without competent professional guidance is asking for serious trouble. Get a lawyer to help you. Get a CPA to help you. We are not lawyers. We are not CPAs. We're not accountants. We're not financial planners. Please call them if you have specific questions about how these strategies and these structures and these ideas work in your area. In summary, we very sincerely hope that you enjoyed this training class. I know Phil and I really enjoyed putting it together for you guys out there. We definitely put our hearts into it, and I hope you can see that. And we really believe in these strategies, and we personally use them ourselves. And we're excited to have you get out there and try some of them as well. Now, we're very confident that if you put a single-minded effort into mortgage assignment and some of the other strategies that we've talked about in this presentation, you're going to see profits very quickly. Now, remember, you are helping people solve their problems. You're helping the seller who can't sell, and you're helping the buyer who can't buy. And these strategies that we've talked about, they do that. And I think that as soon as you're able to put them in place, you're going to see both positive and lucrative changes in your own life. And we wish you a very, very happy trail as you go through and continue your investing.